we're coming to you from the Mellow 94.7 studios here in the city of Mandaluyong. It's the Smart Gilas Pilipinas podcast. If you're listening for the first time, my name is Stan.
And my name is Ro.
Thank you so much for joining us. Well, we talk about wrestling for the thinking Pinoy fan. That's what we do.
This is the Smart Gilas Pilipinas podcast coming to you live on a rainy night. Well, not exactly live. But
not too live.
You know, we're in the flesh. And we are, you know, in the flesh after a rainy night. I came all the way here from rainy, trafficking Makati City.
I love how you're recording habang basang sisiw ka.
Yeah, and I'm really soaking wet here and it's kind of cold in the booth. But I'll live. Don't worry about me.
I'm glad that you're living. I'm glad that you're happy and that you're here right now. I think the one thing that's keeping you going is the fact that you finally have your Mystico mask right next to you.
You're damn right. If you have Stan as a friend on Facebook or you follow him on Twitter or something, you will see that he has his Dragon Rojo mask.
That's right. Follow me on Instagram. It's at DJStan947. I've got the photos there. I was like a happy kid on Christmas morning when my mask came in. And the first thing I did was naturally try it on.
Right. And I was excited to have my mask, but I can't yet because the mask came to him.
Yeah. And so Ro had to wait a good 3 days. Now he's a happy kid. He tried it on. He took a selfie with his mask on. Probably later on in the show, we're going to put on our masks for real and post for a photo. That'll be our new official avatar on iTunes. Have we mentioned we are on iTunes,
We are on iTunes, by the way. And I hope you download our podcast. You subscribe to it for free. All for free.
We're paying for this shit, but you're not. This is free.
Yeah, that's how much we love you. We are giving it to you for free, and you don't have to spend a single dime, a single centavo on our voices, and I hope that's still okay with you.
But we thank you anyway. We do thank you for always making us a part of your week, as wrestling is a part of our week every week.
And I have had a good week now that I have my mask.
It has been a good week for wrestling, not just for you and me, but for wrestling as a whole. But as always, we got to give it to you straight up. There are things we loved, things we liked, and things we flat out didn't like. Let's get to our spots and botches list, shall we?
Yeah, and nothing is perfect as much as we want every thing to go our way. We just cannot have that. And we have our spots and botches for this week.
Let's get on it. We're going to do it in chronological order. As you know, it's been a busy week. We started the week with Money in the Bank, and then we had one hell of a Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, and my only regret is we don't record this any later because we could have featured NXT and SmackDown.
Oh, right. But, we could actually try starting the week from NXT. Maybe that's something we could work on.
Maybe next week. But since we've got a busy week in front of us, behind us so far with Money in the Bank and SmackDown, where there is no space for last week's NXT and SmackDown.
Definitely. There's no space for that. So let's get to Money in the Bank and Raw, starting off with a kickoff. Yeah, Daniel Bryan in the kickoff. It's one of the few times that we've actually had an in-ring promo instead of a dark match, supposedly.
And usually the kickoff matches are hidden gems. They would be nice matches, solid matches that for one reason or another don't make it on the main card, and that would be a shame. But this time Daniel Bryan came out to explain his situation, to address the WWE Universe as to how he is faring so far. And I don't know, if you were a popular champion coming off the biggest show of the year,
yeah,
would you come back, would you make your first appearance at the pre-show of a not so big pay-per-view?
No. No. And I know that you're one of the people out there. I know, Ro, that he's one of the people who actually do campaign for Money in the Bank to replace Survivor Series as one of the big four pay-per-views.
Yeah, when you think about it, Survivor Series isn't really Survivor Series anymore. I'd like to think that maybe if you would watch closely, if you would observe, they give a bigger deal to Money in the Bank than they do Survivor Series lately.
And that's fair. Fine, that's fair that Money in the Bank probably is a bigger pay-per-view nowadays, but to have a popular champion like Daniel Bryan coming off at a kickoff, I think that's a no-no. That shouldn't have been done. If ever he was going to make an in-ring return to at least just cut a promo, they would have had the better sense. Or I'd like to think they would have had the better sense to put him on the main card.
Yeah, people want to see this guy. People will pay to see Daniel Bryan. And why not, you know, for any other... as you do for any other featured superstar, featured talent, why not save him for later in the evening to make sure that some of the people who paid for a ticket to get into the show would stick around?
And it absolutely made no sense to me. I'm still scratching my head over it. I think it was a bad decision, bad move. We don't have to go into full detail on this because you probably know as well as we do that in perfect storytelling sense, it would have just been so much better if they'd put Daniel Bryan on the main card.
And I hope this doesn't give I hope it doesn't give any credence to the rumors that they've lost faith in Daniel Bryan after getting injured.
God, I hope not.
After getting injured at the time they need him the most.
I know, and a lot of people have been talking about this. Let's just keep hoping and keep praying. Bonus points for Bo Dallas, you know, for him appearing and telling Daniel Bryan to bo-leave. Because Lord knows we all have to bo-leave and believe in Daniel Bryan getting better.
I'm going to leave the bo-leave stuff to you. You know how I feel about Bo Dallas.
I am a bo-leaver. I really am.
Let's move on to our second botch.
Wow, two straight botches.
Yeah, two straight botches.
Week.
If we're going through this in chronological order, we'll go through it. Two straight botches if we have to.
All right, our second botch for the week, Big E's preacher voice.
You know what? Personally, I don't mind it that much as you do. I've seen some comments on wondering what Big E is doing with this whole preacher thing, because it's kind of weird. It's kind of strange to hear. It's not how, you know, people would talk nowadays.
Right. If you remember how Martin Luther King Jr. used to speak, like, I'm sure all of us have seen some clips of his I Have a Dream speech.
Right. Even the first words of that speech.
Exactly. You think of Martin Luther King Jr. and then you turn the volume up all the way to 11 and 12, and that's probably Big E right now.
Well, again, well, what do you think of it?
I don't know. For me, it comes across as too contrived, too pretentious. He's trying hard to be funny, and I don't find it as fun. Because I follow Big E on Instagram, and you should too.
Yeah, I do. So
because
he produces good content
on Instagram. And the content he shows, and that's normally inconsistent with his character on screen. And I like his Instagram character, because essentially, that's Big E in real life. And I just wish that Big E in real life came across more on Big E on screen.
And the best characters are yourself turned up to 11.
That's right. And that's something Stone Cold Steve Austin has said numerous times.
But I don't think Big E is being funny when he does the preacher voice. I just think that he's being serious, but in a completely different way. Maybe in a way that John Cena would do when he's not really donning on, wearing the really, really serious voice hat in his major feuds. But I don't have a problem with this. I don't have a problem with this at all, because it's one way to get yourself to stand out.
Right. I mean, I know how Dolph Ziggler has his own way of standing out. You know, when he gives a promo, he starts off really slow, then goes really, really fast, and then he slows down again at the end. And I like that. I love it when he does that. It gets me to listen. But then again, for some reason, I can actually see na totoong tao yung kausap niya.
Right.
Because that you can imagine Dolph Ziggler actually talking like that without a microphone outside of the ring.
Right. Okay.
But if Big E were to do that, let's say at a subway station in New York, he would come across as an idiot.
But how do you know he doesn't really talk like that?
That's the thing, because I don't know Big E in real life, and neither do you.
No, what if he does talk like that in real life?
That would be funny, though.
See, exactly.
Oh, fine.
Exactly. What if he really does, you know, when he's arguing with Caitlyn? Hey, Caitlyn, don't you know that my boobs are bigger than yours? You will not be able to beat me in my cup size. But anyway, no, but seriously, if you were Big E, what would you rather have people say about you? Would you rather have them say now, oh, he's really boring. I don't know what to feel about him, because he's kind of quiet and he doesn't really stand out. Or would you rather have him say that, what the hell is this guy doing? It's not working and it's really strange.
Fine, I guess we're going to go with the classic adage that any publicity is good publicity.
Right. It's a start. For me, it's a start. It's baby steps. Maybe it's a way to, you know, maybe it's a way for Big E to be more funny in the future. Or maybe he's finding his voice as a serious superstar.
All right. Okay. I think that's cool. We'll agree to disagree for now. I'm going to mark it as a potential botch on my list.
Right.
Or on my personal list. But okay. I'm going to be open, because I'm all for Big E standing out because of a character. And if this is his way of finding a voice, then by all means, let's have Big E come out with his own unique character. Let's get to our next spot this time on our spots and botches list. Since we're doing it chronologically, both Money in the Bank ladder matches, those are spots for the week.
Not the best Money in the Bank matches in history, but they delivered.
They did. They had me at the edge of my seat, but if I had to pick one over the other, I'd probably pick the contract match.
No, I would pick the main event match.
Okay, why the main event match? I'll explain my pick in a bit.
All right, for Money in the Bank matches, I've found that 8 is the magic number. If you would recall WrestleMania 26, the Money in the Bank match where Jack Swagger won, there were 10 people in the match.
That was a clusterfuck.
It was. It really was. Too many people trying to get their spots in, and that leaves other people resting outside the ring. And then, on the other end of the spectrum, you've got the lowest, which would be 6 men.
From the original match in WrestleMania 21.
And in the contract match of this of last Sunday's pay-per-view.
That's right. There were 6 competitors as well. What's wrong with having 6 guys in? I've always thought that 6 was the magic number.
Well, if you would notice, there was too much of a lull in between the action going on, especially when it came through the ladder and going up the ladder and grabbing the briefcase.
Okay.
So 8 is a magic number because there is quite a nice balance of lulls and action. There's enough people to go around, enough people to take turns getting their shine in, getting their spots in, and it doesn't really, it's not too slow and it's not too fast.
All right. Okay. So it's more because of the number than because of what went down in the match.
And because in general, the action was also good. Cesaro, Sheamus, Kane, Cena, Orton, they know how to put together a good match. I think the spots were crazier. Do you remember the one that where the ladders formed an A and they were,
yes,
and Cesaro and Sheamus, I think, were fighting for balance. That was crazy. That was a spot that stuck with me.
Yeah.
And I think you have issues with the finish.
I have issues with the finish. I have a lot of issues with the finish, mostly because I felt that John Cena went into Super Cena mode again. And if you haven't seen the pay-per-view yet, spoiler alert, Cena won.
Yeah,
lol.
Right. And, I'm sure you already know that.
Right. And it was supposed to be Randy Orton and Kane, with Kane holding the ladder for Randy Orton as Orton went up to get the championships. And then for some reason, John Cena just comes back to life and he gives both Randy Orton and Kane an AA of their own. And then he climbs up so effortlessly, mind you, to unhook the WWE World Heavyweight Championships. I thought he could have at least seemed hurt, or I thought he could have at least faced more opposition. But I don't know. I'm not the bookers. I'm not creative. I'm just voicing out how, storytelling-wise, there could have been more.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. But I don't think he no-sold anything. He was out for like 5 minutes after taking a finisher, I think.
Yeah.
And it wasn't so bad. Okay. You got to rest for 5 minutes, so you might be as better refreshed than the guys who are on the ladder.
But he could have at least shown some damage.
Yeah, I understand. Maybe he could have took, you know, a few more seconds going up, being more slow. You know, yeah, you're right. Acting hurt. But overall, I don't see a problem with it. I think I had more of a problem, you know, kayfabe-wise, when Kane broke Ambrose Ascent up and opened it up for Seth Rollins to win.
Why is that?
I wanted Dean Ambrose to win, even though I predicted Seth to win.
I predicted Seth to win. I also wanted Dean to win. But here's the thing. Like, kayfabe-wise, I suspended my disbelief. And I really just gave in to kayfabe. And this is why I like the contract ladder match more.
No, I gave in to kayfabe because I marked out at the possibility of Dean Ambrose winning and got sad when Kane, gave it to Seth.
Here's the thing. That's exactly what happened to me at the contract match. Like, when I was watching that, most of the time, more often than not, I was actually marking out. Whereas, in the ladder match for the championships, I kind of knew that Cena was going to win. And it was pretty much a foregone conclusion for most of us who observe wrestling like a sport that Cena was going to win.
Okay.
So, in terms of unpredictability, siguro mas mataas yung unpredictability factor of the contract ladder match. That's where I'm coming from.
Okay, yeah.
And that's
sure.
why
yeah,
I enjoyed it
Yeah,
more.
You're right. I didn't know who was going to win the contract match, even though it should have been plain and obvious that Seth was gonna be a favorite to win it.
Right, right. And you know how big of an edgehead I am too. So
right.
Bonus points for the edge references.
Yeah, yeah, right. For the chair shots.
The chair shots as one guy was ascending, and then having him come down, and having the guy using the chair go up the ladder and claim the briefcase. That always gets a thumbs up for me.
Okay, let's agree to disagree.
All right, we're good.
You like the contract match. I like the world title match.
Okay, that's fair. But at least we're on the same page when it comes to the fact that John Cena winning was the obvious and the safe choice.
Was best for business.
It was best for business. Some people would disagree, but here on the Smart Gilas Pilipinas podcast, we think it's best for business.
Honestly, there was no other way to see it. I mean, there was Orton, sure,
yeah.
for sure.
Uh-huh.
Well, but it's either Orton or Cena to lose, as we said in the previous episode.
Right. And if you think otherwise, do let us know. Tweet us at Stan947.
At Roizwar.
We are on Twitter. Now let's get to our next botch. And this is pretty recent news as well, and news that came out after Raw. Mm-hmm. Emma got arrested right before Raw. All right? she got arrested for allegedly having stolen an iPad case worth $21.14.
You know what? I've heard this news only this morning. I don't know why. Maybe because I've been too busy lately. But this is crazy. Are we even sure that Emma stole an iPad case worth $21? I'm sure she could afford a $21 iPad case. What the hell?
Her lawyer said that when Emma was checking out her items at that department store, she must have forgotten to check out that iPad case because it was a self-checkout counter.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's the side of Emma's camp. But here's where I'm bothered, and here's where this is a botch.
Right. Yeah, sorry. I dwell too much on the arrest. Go on.
WWE released Emma. They fired her. They fired her like within 24 hours of finding out about the arrest. And given the fact that many other wrestlers have been arrested in the past for many dubious reasons, some of them much, much worse than stealing an iPad case worth $21.
Yeah, like, you know, a certain real American driving under the influence of weed.
Right? Right? And still these guys are employed by the company. How about when Rob Van Dam and Sabu were pulled over for the same thing, for weed? RVD got...
Hey.
What?
What? He got released.
RVD was stripped of the championships.
Oh, that's a big deal.
But he wasn't
I'm sure that
fired.
Was a big deal.
But he wasn't fired.
But he left anyway.
He wasn't fired. That's the bottom line, my friend. He wasn't fired.
All right. I'm just messing with you.
And then hours after Emma got fired, and I'm ranting because I'm pissed off because the logic really escapes me.
Oh, yeah, sure.
They rehired her. And I'm all for hiring Emma back because I think she's good for the Divas division. And I think having her in the WWE is best for business. But to fire someone and then to rehire them, parang ano ba talaga? What is your stance? I'm glad they righted the wrong, but the mere fact that they even committed that wrong in the first place really, really is illogical on my end.
But I'm glad that they knew their mistake because, as you said, as you've been saying, it really sends a bad message on not just the rosters, but the WWE as a whole.
Yeah.
Right?
It does. I mean, fine, I get it. You're trying to send the message that your superstars should be role models for children, that they shouldn't be committing crimes, but they could have at least gotten into the further details of the story first before they took action.
Right. So that means Adam Silver has to fire the next racist owner.
Damn.
As in, no questions asked.
No questions asked, yeah. Fire him. Strip him of his team. Yeah. But yeah, that is our third botch for this week. Shall we get to our next item on the list?
Let's do it.
All right. This next one is a spot because they'd been building this one up for pretty much ever since Raw began. Mm-hmm. They build the return of a former WWE champion, a multimedia platform cross-branded entertainment superstar. I memorized it, bro. They were building the return of this person. And we got many returns at Raw, in case you haven't seen Raw yet.
Mm-hmm.
We had the return of a former world champion in the Great Khali. We had the return of a former WWE champion and a multimedia, and I'm saying this with air quotes, cross-branded entertainment superstar.
Wait,
in...
He's really proud of the fact that he memorized this.
I am.
Wow.
I am. In The Miz.
Awesome!
I came to play! There's a price to pay!
So he returned, but of course this is all a setup to the return of the one, the only, the Ayatollah of rock and roll, the guy with the original idea of the Money in the Bank briefcase, Y2J Chris Jericho.
Break the wall! Break down the walls!
Wow, this is crazy. Nobody was expecting this return.
Nobody was expecting the return.
I mean, maybe not even when they said at Raw, at the beginning of Raw, that a champion was coming back. Maybe some of them didn't all believe it.
Right, because when you say that, a lot of people actually fit the bill. Mick Foley fits under that bill.
Yeah, exactly. I would take a Mick Foley return any day.
The Rock fits under that bill.
Yeah, I'm sure he would have come back with two great cheers.
Logic aside, Batista would have fit the bill.
I don't know. I don't know. So soon?
Kaya nga, logic aside, Batista would have fit the bill.
Maybe.
To be very fair.
If we stretched it, okay, maybe.
But we all know that You know, from the minute I heard that phrase, I knew Chris Jericho was coming back.
Were you swerved?
No, I wasn't. Well, I was
no,
fine.
No, you were swerved by The Miz coming out first?
Oh, yeah, I was. I was like, what the fuck? And then he comes out, right? And he, well, you know, we have to praise The Miz because he ditched the long hair, went back to his old haircut, and he went back to his old natural style.
Yeah, and that's a spot in itself, but we don't have enough space for that spot.
Because but we have to praise The Miz.
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying it's a spot in itself because Miz has always been better as a wisecracking heel.
A snarky one.
Yeah, snarky heel, this asshole who comments on everyone. And when he came back as this movie star, it's like he never left.
He wasn't the movie star, bro. He was the Marine, damn it!
Right. It's like he never left because that's what people remember Miz better as.
Yeah.
Right? And I hope that with this kind of rejuvenation, I hope that he improves again, gets back from his regression, and maybe starts to put out quality in-ring work.
Starts wrestling like a former champ again.
Yeah, starts wrestling like a former champion. Exactly. Thank you.
Now, Chris Jericho, of course, his return, the happiness was short-lived because right as when he was about to say, "Welcome to Raw is Jericho," Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt family come out, and instantly, the fans just chanted, "This is awesome." I was salivating from my seat from where I was watching Raw.
It's a really, really nice, promising feud.
Yeah.
Because,
imagine the promos.
Yeah, imagine the promos. I mean, Cena is a good promo guy by himself, but Jericho is on a whole nother level.
I agree, and I can't wait to see the story itself. Like, what would the narrative be? Like, of course, with every story, there has to be an origin. Like, ano yung pot ni Bray Wyatt kay Chris Jericho?
Right, and we'll never know until we find out.
And that's why I'm excited for Raw and why Y2J's return, and fine, even The Miz being a heel once again is a spot in itself. Next item on the list, and this is going to be a long one. We're going to go into detail on this one.
Maybe, we'll go into detail on it after we finish the entire spots and botches list.
Right. Because we're talking about this next item on the list. It's a huge botch.
Yeah, it's a huge botch, which is why it deserves its own topic.
Right, and it's poor storytelling. And we have some examples.
Poor storytelling has been a thing for WWE for quite a long time now.
Right, and
but it's never too late. It's never too early as well to keep talking about it.
Right, and Roe and I, we mentioned this on the previous episode. By nature, we're storytellers.
Right.
So we're extra critical about how stories come across us because, for one thing, we like to think we've got brains.
Yeah, and we're writers.
We're writers by trade. So, siyempre, if a story comes off as nonsensical or illogical to us, we're going to rip it because we felt or we feel that these insult our intelligence.
Of course. And we don't like, if there's something we hate the most, it's getting our intelligences insulted.
I was looking forward to the Layla versus Summer Rae match at Money in the Bank.
Mm.
And that's because I like Summer Rae. And I kind of like this little love triangle that they built because we've been talking about it for a good 2 weeks on the podcast. And I thought that the match was a good example of poor storytelling. But we'll get into that later as we head into our next spot on the spots and botches list. Let's talk about happy things first.
Happy things. Okay, what you got? You got this happy thing all by yourself.
I'd like to think this is a happy thing. I thought that Zeb Coulter's promo at Raw, his face promo, by the way, was a spot. I liked it.
Really? Yeah, he talked about the freedom of speech.
Yes, he did.
And in a logical manner as well.
That's right. He talked about it in such a way that he just stated everything correctly without opening the room for other people to misinterpret it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I found really intelligent, because we know that Zeb Coulter is a master of words. He's got a gift of gab, and he has a good way of making you either eat off the palm of his hand as a good guy or as a bad guy.
And that's something that, you know, it's kind of lost on the newer generation. And maybe you find it in, you know, one in a million guys, one of the few guys like Bray Wyatt, Dean Ambrose, CM Punk, you know. And we have to appreciate the art of cutting a promo like this from a guy like Zeb.
That's right. And Zeb is one of those living legends, so to speak. Like, he comes from a different time, and he was able to bring that to the ring and, you know, against Rusev and against Lana, who everybody unanimously despises.
Well, I don't think anyone, or I don't think everyone despises Lana.
Good point. Good catch. But because of their characters are pretty much hated because they're the bad guys, right? Zeb Coulter comes in, tries to defend Old Glory, tries to defend USA, and he successfully turns himself and the real American Jack Swagger face.
For how long, nobody really knows.
Nobody really knows, but I think it's a good thing in the sense that it's fresh because we haven't seen Zeb and Jack Swagger as faces throughout their entire runs in the WWE.
Right, and well, I hope that it doesn't become too much of a welcome thing.
I know, and that's why we're going to get back into poor storytelling because in essence, when you cheer for Jack Swagger and when you cheer for Zeb Coulter, what does that say? It says that you're xenophobic as well because the real nature of the Zeb Coulter character, the real nature of the Jack Swagger character is that they're parodies of the Tea Party movement.
No matter what they might be saying right now, and no matter who they're saying it to.
Right.
Right? In its heart, you've got Zeb and Swagger saying all these things about foreigners, about immigrants.
They have a deportation list for crying out
loud. Yeah, and not, was it, what, a month ago?
Yeah.
2 months ago?
And on the list are names of Adam Rose, Sheamus, Paige, Rusev and Lana, all the foreign WWE superstars. So as an American fan, let's say you're one of the American masses, and you're tuned in, and you actively boo Rusev and Lana, but you cheer Swagger and Zeb, you're pretty much saying that you're a xenophobe yourself.
Right, exactly. And I hope you don't want to be called a xenophobe by anyone else, by society.
Because it's not a good thing. It's not cool to be a xenophobe. It is out of vogue. It's a characteristic that should be that of a villain, of a bad guy.
Right. And as I've been telling people, this is 2014. You can't be having guys like that anymore.
Right. But the fact that these guys have suddenly become a good guy just because they said the right things, quote unquote,
at the right time.
At the right time. Bigla naging good guy na sila. Parang it sounded so rushed. It sounded so sudden.
Right.
And it reminds me of another turn that happened at Raw, which is the Paige turn.
Right, exactly. Yeah, okay. You tell them about the Paige turn, for those who haven't seen it yet.
For those who haven't seen it yet, Paige came out, she was going to cut a promo as a Divas Champion, and in the middle of her speech, out comes the returning AJ Lee. Who- Let's light it up, light it up, light it up, light it up, light it up. Out a shower of cheers from the adoring public who did miss her.
And CM Punk. I'm sure they miss CM Punk more.
No, yes.
From the way they've been chatting all throughout that segment, you would know that they miss CM Punk more. And maybe they thought that since AJ is back, maybe someday or, you know, in the near future, we can get Punk back.
But right now, because AJ and CM Punk are married, probably AJ is probably the next best thing right now.
Yeah, well, I guess she's not pregnant. Good for you.
Good for us.
Right.
Good for us.
But I'm sure he's still sticking it to her.
Damn it. Anyway, AJ comes out and she turns into a good guy again by admitting she was wrong, admitting that she was being being a total jerk by having rubbed it in everybody's faces how she was a Divas champion and how she was better than everybody. And then Paige just goes out and tells her that, no, you think I'm stupid? This is the same thing that I did to you when you were the champion, and I'm not going to let you goad me into a rematch. And then AJ challenges her to a match. And then Paige instantly turns into a bad guy by saying, I don't think these people here in this arena want to see a rematch right now.
After that, and during the match, Paige was acting more like a heel.
Right. She was very aggressive with her moveset, with the way she was addressing AJ, and everything about her. And, I mean, I don't want to digress about how the bigger point is that the poor storytelling has been prevalent in the WWE. But I'd like to think that the heel turn for Paige is the best thing that happened to her character since she debuted on the main roster.
Well, yeah, and well, the debut wasn't really handled well. I mean, it was nice for people who watch NXT and for smarks who follow Paige's career. But when you look back and look at the bigger picture, it wasn't really handled that well.
It wasn't handled very well. And throughout her title reign, she was pretty much a cookie-cutter babyface.
For
no
reason.
Character.
Yeah, for no character, for no reason. Nothing really there to anchor her.
And now we get a Paige who suddenly has a character, has a chip on her shoulder. And I'd like to think that, you know, while there are opinions that the Paige turn, the Paige heel turn was sudden, I'd like to think it was a long time coming, in the sense that she was getting disrespected by pretty much every diva in the locker room. She was getting hate from Oksana before she got released, getting hate from Alicia Fox, getting hate from Cameron, and probably even Naomi. I'd like to think that when you get disrespected to that level, you'd get pissed off at your coworkers and you're going to want to snap on them at some point.
I think it was just too sudden. I think the fruit wasn't ripe yet, if you will. I think that there could have been, you know, more in that people calling her a fluke thing.
Yeah.
I just think that it was so sudden because at Money in the Bank, when she was defending her title against Naomi,
yeah,
there was nothing there.
There was nothing there.
There was nothing there. I mean, oh, she wrestled like a face.
Yeah.
And now, all of a sudden, she has a chip on her shoulder. Right?
I mean, okay.
We could have built that up slowly.
I mean, we can't change the past. But I hope that she can build on this. Probably let that chip on her shoulder be her character. Because Lord knows that our girl Paige needs a character right now. She needs that one thing to make her interesting. Kind of like how Alicia Fox needed to have those meltdowns to make her relevant on air.
Well, and well, the only thing sad about that is that now that AJ's back, Alicia Fox is going to be, you know, shunted to the side. But anyway, well, you're right. Any character for Paige at the moment is a good character, and a heel character is a better character.
That's right, and we're looking forward to having, you know, to having characters for all these personalities we see on TV, because that's how we get those storylines going. That's how we get the storytelling to actually be good and not poor. One last note, though, as I was trying to get into earlier, the Summer Rae Layla match. I was looking forward to that, but I was very disappointed just with the mere fact that Fandango was pretty much in Layla's corner throughout the match. What's the point of having a special guest referee who isn't impartial?
Well, they didn't spend too much time and effort on the whole, on the drama between the three people.
They did spend a lot of time building up Layla versus Summer Rae, yeah, having Fandango as the third element, not so much.
No, they spent time to build it up, but they didn't spend effort on, you know, making sure it was all portrayed correctly.
And that was something I would regret. Mostly because they spent time on the main card for that craptastic match and not for Daniel Bryan's speech. So sayang, dun na sayangan ako. That's why I think overall, well, there are a lot of examples of these. Poor storytelling.
Right, that and Adam Rose in the Sandow match.
That's right. That also got time over Daniel Bryan. And you know the poor storytelling. We can say so many things about this. We can go on and on. But let's close the book on poor storytelling for this week by saying that it's regrettable, and we hope that creative can be creative enough to snap out of it.
I don't know if it's really creative. I just think that people up top, they're idiots surrounding Vince McMahon, and they're idiots all over the organization. So what I'm sure it's not just creative's thing. It's not just creative's fault. But we take what we can get, and so far in a month, we've gotten bad stuff, but we also gotten good stuff.
So let's talk about something good once again. How about Stardust
again? Yes, Stardust. I was actually worried for that by talking about Stardust for 3 weeks in a row, we might sound, you know, a bit too annoying.
But we are fanboys of Stardust, and we have to give to Cody Rhodes, because Rose said it himself this morning. He's just that damn good.
I've been a fan of Cody ever since the whole Dashing days.
Uh-huh.
Ever since the Dashing days, ever since the Mask days, even though it wasn't the best of characters. It had promise, but it wasn't the best of characters. And I have been a fan of his in-ring work ever since. I knew he was that good. And he proves this even more with his evolution, his transformation into Stardust.
And he didn't just transform his outfit or his character. Even his moveset has changed. He no longer really uses the disaster kick. He had to use the crossroads at Money in the Bank. But at Raw this week, he debuted a new finisher called Dark Matter.
And not just that, he changed his entire demeanor as well.
He doesn't really talk like Cody anymore. He speaks in language that can come across as cryptic.
Right. And, well, as I said last week, I think that when I watched Stardust, when I watched Cody playing Stardust, I really think that Cody's having fun. What happened at Money in the Bank at Raw, it solidifies that belief, that opinion, that I really do think he's having fun with it. And I hope, and I really hope that he can go far with it.
And we also hope that for as far as they take it, the Brotherhood as a team stays together. Goldust and Stardust, they stay together at least long enough for them to have their WrestleMania match. This is what I'm hoping for.
Oh my God. Now at this point, I don't want them to have a WrestleMania match yet. I want them to live long as a tag team, because not only does a tag team division in the WWE need it right now, it really does have the strappings, the makings of a legendary tag team. And I want to see him become that first. If there's no space for Cody or Goldust to succeed as a single superstar, then I want to see them be a legendary tag team.
It's funny that we have this opinion right now, because I remember just a few months back when the signs of dissension and the seeds of dissent were first sowed into the Brotherhood, we were saying that they were the most dispensable tag team out there.
Neither one dispensable, but the breakup would be a good story.
Right, that the breakup would be something we'd welcome.
Yeah, but then there were too many breakups that happened in the past couple of months. And Stardust happened. Did you ever see Stardust coming?
I didn't see Stardust coming.
Me neither. And now that we've got Stardust, we don't want to let him go.
No, we don't want to let him go.
I don't want to let him go.
The tag team division does need a great team like the Rhodes Brothers right now.
Right, and I think Cody is talented enough, not just as a worker, but also an actor.
Yeah.
Right. I think he's talented enough to carry the Stardust character into greater heights.
I hope that they continue giving Goldust and Stardust the ball, and I hope that they run all the way to the moon with this. That's the hope for Stardust.
To the stars.
To the stars! Thank you. I like that. I see what you did there.
Right.
Let's get into our next item on the spots and botches list.
This last botch. Yeah, our last botch
for the list.
This Monday's Raw saw a match between Kofi Kingston and Cesaro. And we'll get to Cesaro in a bit because he's really funny at the moment, amusing at the moment. But we all saw their match ending at the commercial break.
And here's the thing. We didn't see the match end.
No. We kind of do. If you have the WWE app.
Which I don't.
And, well, okay. For those who do have it, they would have seen it. But those are the only people who have seen it.
And I think it's unfair. I think it wasn't a good move for them to end the match so suddenly on the app. I get it. You're trying to push the WWE app. I get it. You're trying to push exclusive content. But I don't think you should leave your viewers out in the dark, especially when you're in the middle of a match, because you're still trying to tell a story.
Right. Well, I don't know if it's deliberate shilling of the app, but at worst, it's terrible planning, and at best, it's shilling the app deliberately. But either way, it was a terrible idea. My friend on Twitter, Sean Ross Sapp, also a wrestling writer, says that it kind of defended the move by saying that, well, we want wrestling to be a bit more realistic. This is what we get. But I said, in sports, the camera doesn't go away. The broadcast doesn't go away. As long as there's action in the court, in the ring, in the field, you know, it always stays there. It doesn't leave when everyone knows that something might happen.
Right. You don't cut the break until the game ends. Like when you're watching a basketball game, unless there's a foul, unless there's a timeout, you don't go into a commercial break. You don't miss anybody scoring as much as possible, except when you live in the Philippines, because Lord knows our commercial breaks here are far too long.
I know. And exactly. And if we wanted wrestling to be more like other sports, then this is a thing we should follow as well. Ideally, the broadcast should not leave while there is action. There should not be any commercial breaks between matches.
And this is basic broadcast theory at play.
Right.
Like you don't have to have like a PhD in mass communications to figure this out.
Yeah, you just need to be watching TV. And I'm sure that you don't want a commercial interrupting your live program.
Right. And in storytelling, when it comes to storytelling naman, I'd like to think that the WWE app offers exclusive content as a corollary or as a supplement.
Yeah.
Thank you. As a supplement to the original story. But as far as original stories on the mainstream go, dapat nasa TV yan. And that's something that you can't just cut away whenever you feel it's convenient.
And the finish of a match, as everyone knows, as every fan knows, as every worker knows, as every agent, every booker knows, is the most important part of the match.
It's the high point of the match, and you take it for you to deprive the viewer of that. I think that's highway robbery.
Right, exactly. And maybe there was an extended segment after the match in which Cesaro beat the living hell out of Kofi.
Uh-huh.
But still, it's kind of like portraying a war on a TV drama. You want to see the war for maximum effect, for maximum drama.
Right.
You don't want to cut after the war where people are talking about the war and or showing the aftermath of the war, because where's the excitement in that?
My thing is, when I was watching Raw and I was watching Cesaro beat the living hell out of Kofi Kingston, I didn't know why. I heard Kofi's music, so I kind of had an idea that he won. But I don't get why he was pissed off and why the referee was trying to get in the way of him hurting Kofi when I knew that they were in a match to begin with.
Right. So, but there's something missing. There's something missing in the middle, and your brain has to connect the logic. But it can't because it wasn't presented with those facts.
And that's why Kofi versus Cesaro ending during the commercial break exclusively on the WWE app is a huge botch on the list.
Never again, please, WWE. Learn from this mistake. I know you try a lot of things and you try a lot of risks, maybe not enough risks even.
You hit, you miss.
This is a huge, huge botch.
It was.
Huge botch. It should never, because if it were a spot, if people were okay with it, and they shouldn't be, then it would have to be a precedent. It would have it would allow the WWE to keep doing things like that. And it should not be that way.
It shouldn't be that way at all.
Very, very huge botch.
But since we're talking about Cesaro, and we got to close off this list of spots and botches, let's end it on a good note. Let's talk about our boy Cesaro rocking that eye patch.
That eye patch. You know what? When I first heard the news that he suffered a slight injury to his eye.
A detached retina?
Yeah. No, it wasn't a detached retina. It was a scratched eye.
Okay.
It was a scratched eye, right? What I wanted to happen was that Cesaro come out with an eye patch.
And we're getting it.
Yeah, we're getting it.
If you follow the WWE on Instagram, there is a graphic there where the six participants in the six-man tag team match at main event this week, they were all shown, and Cesaro is rocking that eye patch.
Right, and before I went to the station, I retweeted this meme of Cesaro being superimposed on a Street Fighter screen.
And he fit in so well.
Because he looks like Sagat.
He does.
Right. And now I'm trying to make this hashtag trend. It's called Sagat Zaro.
I do not know if that will work.
I don't know, but some
we're
of my...
We're not going to go that far.
No, some of my friends like it. They like it. It's Sagat Zaro is better than Sagatro. That doesn't even... That's harder to say.
I like the eye patch. Let's leave.
I like the eye patch, and I really think it's funny that he looks like Sagat.
He looks badass in that eye patch.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he keeps rocking that eye patch even without the injury.
I don't know about rocking the eye patch past the injury, but it does look badass for now.
And there's a reason for that.
Right.
And this is something you brought up. I'm not sure if you remember this right now.
I don't.
Because Cesaro can prove to everyone how he's that damn good. He can beat you with one eye, son. Him wrestling with that eye patch, it just cements his superiority. As an athlete and as a wrestler.
As a super athlete.
Right. He is the super athlete.
Right. All right. So that closes our list of spots and botches. Before we move on to our pick of the week, let's talk about Money in the Bank as a whole for a short while.
Sure.
Okay, right. So quick review. What did you think of the pay-per-view?
Pay-per-view was okay. It wasn't the best Money in the Bank I've seen. Like, I guess if you had to ask me, my favorite Money in the Bank will always be 2011. That was the flagship Money in the Bank.
Of course. And I would point to the pipe bomb, to the pipe bomb promo, to the big Money in the Bank World Championship match.
To the question mark surrounding CM Punk's contract.
Yeah, I would point to that as my biggest argument for making Money in the Bank one of the big four pay-per-views in place of Survivor Series.
But I thought that pay-per-view for this year was actually pretty good as a whole. It wasn't a letdown. If I had to give it like a 5-star rating, I'd probably give it a 3.
Right. Okay. I kind of agree. It wasn't a letdown, but there were too many spots, too many places in the card where I just kind of wanted things to move along.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the opener was good. We got some good matches other than the Money in the Bank match. We got a good match in Stardust and Goldust versus Ryback. And I'd like to say that we got a good match out of Rusev and Big E.
That's right, we did. And for a while there, I had to suspend my disbelief once again. And I was actually rooting for Big E. And I was caught at the edge of my seat when Big E would have a couple of close pinfalls.
Right, and you know this. In the previous episode, I wanted Big E and Rusev to have a competitive match.
And to look like they were equals. And
right.
We got that.
And we finally got that. Finally, we have a Rusev match in which Rusev did not just squash his opponent.
And yet, when he put on that accolade, there was something markedly different from when he put on that accolade compared that to his previous accolades.
Right. Well, it kind of sounds weird. Okay, but yeah, you're right. This accolade that he slapped on last Sunday seemed to be 1,000 times better than any camel clutch I've seen recently. Not from Jinder Mahal, you know, guys like that. From, I don't know, even Muhammad Hassan.
And that's a good thing. That's a good thing because we know that Rusev is improving. And at the same time, Big E is also pulling his weight in that match.
He should. He just doesn't get time to pull his weight. Because he's been relegated to jobbing, to getting fed to Rusev.
Right. And Now that we mentioned the things that we did like about the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, how about we go into the pick of the week? My pick of the week has to be the AJ return. I'm gonna be very, very personal here because I am a huge fan of AJ, and I'm a sucker for double turns. We did mention earlier that the double turn was very poor in terms of storytelling.
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest double turn in history, but okay, no, it's
not
a double
the greatest
turn.
Double turns, but I'm a sucker for double turns. Anytime it happens, I mark out and I have to take off my thinking cap for a while and say to myself, I just witnessed a double turn. Holy crap.
You have a thinking cap?
I have a thinking cap.
How come you don't use it a lot?
I wear lots of caps. I wear lots of hats.
I know you're a sucker.
I wear a lot of hats.
I know you're a sucker.
I wear a lot of hats in this world.
Anyway, go on.
So the AJ return. Turn, yeah. The AJ return, I think, was a good thing because we have been missing AJ. And I think storytelling-wise, if we have to go back to that, we'd been missing the closure that AJ needed on that story when she lost to Paige in Paige's first ever match on the main roster. I think that AJ and Paige can still pull off a good rivalry, and we mentioned this the week of WrestleMania, that we hope that AJ and Paige could probably be this generation's Lita and Trish Stratus.
Right, yeah, and I still have that hope, especially now that I hope that they're getting into an extended program.
Exactly, exactly. And that's why the mere fact that AJ returned, the mere fact that she and Paige legitimately have a rivalry that isn't just over the title, it's actually bordering on personal now, at least with regard to their characters.
That's actually good.
With a title serving as a mere prize at the end of the day, like a mere accessory and storytelling device, that's best for business. That's a good thing. And that's why, despite the poor storytelling, my pick of the week has to be the AJ return and her subsequent feud with Paige.
Maybe your standards are just that low. Anyway. I'm just kidding.
AJ is up there, bro.
I know, but it still wasn't the best performance from either of them. Maybe from Paige, because she displayed her heel tendencies.
Finally.
Yeah, finally. But yeah, anyway, before I get into my pick of the week, I would just like to comment on Raw. On the goings-on in general, it seems to be more like a reset button after the uncertainty of the Daniel Bryan situation for the past couple of months.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. It seems to be a big reset button with all the returns, with The Miz coming back, Jericho coming back, AJ coming back.
It kind of feels like the Raw after WrestleMania.
Yeah, it
kind
of does, in a way. And it's nice, and I hope that the momentum that they get from Raw and from Money in the Bank as well, it carries over to the next few weeks into Battleground, into SummerSlam, and beyond. My pick of the week is a tag team championship match between the Usos and the Wyatt family to open the Money in the Bank pay-per-view.
All right, it was a great match. I'm going to have to give it to you. That was a solid match.
Yeah, it was a solid pick for an opener. I thought that the show was going to open with the Money in the Bank contract match, but it did not, and I was happy with it.
I was pleasantly surprised. I think that the Usos really put up a good fight. I think the Wyatt family, they are the real deal as well. And I guess in terms of suspending your disbelief, and I keep saying that because in this day and age, it gets harder and harder for members of the IWC to actually do that, you know, without whining and complaining all the time. They got me to suspend my disbelief. They also kept me awake throughout the entire match just so I could see every little thing that happened.
Right, and I wanted the Wyatt family to win. I really did, because I wanted the Wyatt family and the Usos to trade the title belts for the next maybe the next few months.
But it still looks like they're still going to have that rivalry.
Yeah.
It's not going to end just yet. I successfully called it, by the way, that the Usos would retain.
Right, that you did. And you're right. They didn't lose weekly. They lost strongly. It was a good match. Everyone pulled their weight, even Eric Rowan, which would be the weak link. And the Usos, with this performance, cemented their legacy, or further cemented their legacy as one of the best tag teams the company's ever seen.
They are legit. And for anybody and everybody who thinks that the Usos are a flash in the pan,
and I hope you don't, because they're that damn good.
Because they've been together since day one.
Obviously. Obviously they have.
That was the point. That thing on their waistband that says day one.
Right.
That's why they're the best natural tag team in wrestling today.
Yeah, and I told you that they might be the best face tag team today in a recent while.
Even better than the Brotherhood.
Yeah, even better than the Rhodes Brothers.
Wow, okay.
Because they've been together since day one.
Oh, okay.
Not just that.
Because if we were judging the Brotherhood and the Usos, I would judge it from, like, which tag team did you feel more sympathy for towards?
It's a factor. It's a factor that they've been together since day one, but they have more chemistry, and they know their identity more than the Rhodes Brothers do. I mean, the Rhodes Brothers are good. They're equally good on their own, but I'd like to think of them as a team of two good guys, but the Usos are a purely good team, a good pure team.
As in, regardless of their alignment.
A good unit.
Regardless of their alignment, their motivations, they will be a good team. Whereas Goldust and Cody Rhodes, or Goldust and Stardust, if one link was missing, you could tell that that team would fall apart.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
But I just think that the Brotherhood are are a team of two good workers, two good wrestlers, but the Usos are a good unit.
Because when you said the best babyface team, I was thinking about it storyline-wise, like inside the world of kayfabe. And if you're going to judge them by that, you have to pick the tag team that really got everybody sympathetic towards them and really fighting for their cause. And if we're talking about that, it's probably the Brotherhood.
Right, okay, sure. But nobody fires up a crowd like the Usos nowadays.
Nowadays. Yeah, that's right. That is right.
I'm saying now. Uh-huh. I said now. The best face team now.
Okay.
Nobody fires up a crowd like the Usos nowadays. And isn't that what a face is supposed to do?
That is what a face is supposed to do. And they do it very, very well.
Yeah. And so that is my pick of the week. The tag title match from Money in the Bank. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. Because it's a really, really great tag team match. This is what tag team wrestling everywhere, not just in the WWE, should be about. And with teams like the Wyatt family, the Usos, maybe Ryback, and Goldust and Stardust. Maybe we can rebuild the tag team division again to what it was in the late last year.
All right, and if you have a different pick of the week, if you've seen Money in the Bank and Raw this week, and you want to offer your opinions on our spots and botches or on our picks of the week,
right? If
do
you
tweet
have,
us.
Yeah, right. If you have a pick of the week from Main Event, from NXT, from SmackDown, whenever you're listening to this, if you have a pick of the week from any of those shows, please do tell us.
We are online. We're on Facebook, Smart Gilas Pilipinas. We are there. Facebook.com/groups/SmartGilasPilipinas. Shout out, by the way, to all the boys and girls of SGP.
What is up, SGP? Hello.
We're also on Twitter. If you have anything to say, anything at all, on the commentary for this week's episode, it's at Stan947.
At RoeIsWar. Please do talk to us.
Do talk to us, because we would love to hear from you. And we do enjoy it whenever you give us feedback on everything we talk about in the show, outside of the show, when we're tweeting, when we're Facebooking or on Instagram. And with that, we got to thank our boys at Mellow 94.7, of course, for letting us use their equipment. And we got to thank you, as always, for going on to iTunes, for subscribing to the podcast, and for downloading this episode.
Right. If you're listening to this on SoundCloud, what are you waiting for? Go to iTunes, subscribe to us, and download our podcast for free.
It's the Smart Gilas Pilipinas podcast. We got to thank you, and we're gonna be fixing this up in just a bit. Hopefully, when you listen, it's a much better product than it is right now.
And hopefully, when you listen, I will have posted my picture of me in the mask.
That's right, because Ro is excited about that mask. I beat him to
it. It is a really, really good mask.
I beat him to it like a couple days, but yeah.
My mask is better than his mask.
Flash. You're going to go for a mask, you go for flashiness.
It's flashy.
Style.
Look, it's gold and shit.
We're going to be arguing about this when we turn the mics off. So we're going to sign it off right now. Thank you so much. We'll catch you again next week.
Peace.